All right, welcome back once again. You are here, Drinks with Friends, with your hosts, Madison Ray.
And that guy, Ray. What's cracking, everybody? Happy Sunday. We are Black in Action.
Yeah, welcome back from Colorado.
Thanks.
Where'd you go exactly?
Went to Denver for 2 days, and then Colorado Springs for 3 days. Did all like the touristy stuff, like Pikes Peak. Garden of the Gods, Cave of the Winds, Manitou Cave, Cliff Dwellings, all kinds of cool stuff that you wouldn't normally see me doing. I was out there climbing mountains and shit.
So, that sounds super well behaved.
Yeah.
Good on you,
man. I mean, I was tight for the whole thing, but yeah.
the way Jesus would have intended.
Right. Yeah, it was a good time. You should go.
Okay.
You should go.
Welcome.
I got the okay for that dude's trip.
Dude's trip.
I just like brought it up to Sam, right? I was like, yeah, you know, like dude's trip. I was like, I don't know how you. She's like, oh, go. I don't care. All right.
Okay, go. I don't care.
Airbnb. Here we come.
Bye.
Exactly. So,
right, bro, that's a trap.
I work a corporate job though, so I gotta build up some PTO again. Once I do that, then yeah, let's make that happen.
Okay, yeah. Deal. Deal. Y'all are hearing it first. We're going to take a dude's trip to fucking Colorado.
We're just going to get super baked to go to Dave and Buster's.
That's probably what it's like. That's the wackest I've ever heard in my life.
You think that until you go in and you got that unlimited game card and you can shoot as many dinosaurs as you want to off of Mimosa Gummies. Then you talk to me about what's lame.
All right, hold on. Before we go any further, let's pay these bills.
All right.
This podcast is brought to you by Android DSM. Power up.
And Susie Sweet Treats. Secret ingredient is love.
Not cocaine.
Welcome back from the motherland. Susie, she had a great trip. She showed me like half of the 2,500 pictures she's taken.
Oh, God. She hit you with a slideshow.
But they're dope pictures. I ain't mad. Like, you know.
But still. But we also have a special guest here with us today. Please, sir, introduce yourself. Let the listeners know.
Hi, everyone. I am dumb comedian Dante Powell. I'm a certified dumb person, so I'm excited to...
Certificate for that?
I'm excited to make it so with my opinions into a microphone. That's how I make a living. I literally say dumb things into a microphone, and people give me money after. So
we've got a professional on the show.
A professional. Yeah. Looking into ringers.
Make us look bad.
Don't worry.
It elevates the game.
Right.
You know, like...
Well, you know me. I step
like,
up to the challenge.
Like Jordan Pippen Rodman type shit. You know what I'm saying? Right. I don't know who's who in a situation, but...
I just want to be the one that doesn't have to
you
dunk.
You know you're Rodman.
No, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
You wearing a studded romper. You're right. Okay, own that.
Yo, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So today's topic... I wanted to... Okay, so this actually started... I put a little post out on Facebook lamenting the closing of Sir's Kitchen.
Right.
We
were supposed to go, and I feel bad because now we don't have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
At least not
same here.
And it's previous.
Yeah.
And what it was. Who knows what it's going to be.
In its current iteration,
right.
You're never going to...
Because Sir said that he's still working, but the restaurant... you know, the restaurant thing just didn't work out.
Yeah.
But this then naturally brought to my mind, like, how many spots have I loved? Black-owned businesses. Soul food. I use air quotes. Because we can get to the definition of what soul food is. We'll get to that, so we can unpack that. Yeah. But why is it that we can't seem to get a foothold for this piece of our culture here in this city? And of course, it started a whole, you know, chain of comments and shady business and whatever.
The shade.
Yeah. Which I feel like, is that part of the reason why it doesn't work out? Is because
absolutely.
Niggas out here just shady as shit?
Yes. 100%.
So, first off, how are we defining soul food here? Is it just food made by black people?
Oh, no.
Is that, because there are some people that have that attitude.
I don't think all, like, I have some aunts who can make soul food. Like, you know the ones we tell to bring the cups?
Yeah.
So, it has to, like, I don't know that there's, like, a specific definition I go to. I just consider it, like, food from the soul. People who love the cooking that, and I personally view it as, there needs to be some lineage to slavery.
Yeah.
Because that, like, that's just kind of how I view it.
Sure.
But you need to be able to track it back to some form of, you know, oppressed black people before, say, Jim Crow. Yeah. And those people who had to learn to cook and feed themselves and their family through the means that were just given to them secondhand, that, again, they learned to cook from the soul. And
it's struggle and survival.
For sure. Like, yeah, absolutely.
My family originally comes from Louisiana, and so a lot of those, like, traditions and training has been, like, passed on to me, like, yo, yeah. I can get up, I'm making some good-ass food on the cheap.
Yes.
You know, what I mean? Yeah. Like, we hook it up. We you know, cast iron skillets, all that stuff. You know, like, that's always been my experience, is just, like, learning from my mother, who learned from her mother and grandmother, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm the same. My people are from Georgia. I grew up in Louisiana. Those mm-hmm. people are from Louisiana. So, like, I grew up on this stuff. And so to come to Des Moines and live here, I basically either have to go to Fat Tuesday, or I have to decide I want to cook something in order to get that back. And every now and again, I do. I'm like, all right, I feel like cooking this weekend, and I'll make a huge feast. But it would be nice to go get it like I could when Patton's was open. Mm-hmm. You know, and you had...
Shout out to Patton's.
Yeah, yeah. So I was...
Nice to the spot.
Yeah.
I never went. That was another one. I never
went. Oh, man.
I've never been to Fat Tuesdays. And for me, and I hate to admit this, but part of it comes down to, like, pure laziness. Like,
oh, yeah, that's...
Like, you're outside of my normal circle.
Bruh.
You know what I mean? Sure, it's like, yeah. Sure, I really, like... And then I hear things like, man, is it really... Am I blindly supporting the blindly supporter? Or is it really worth me driving to a whole nother fucking town, which is basically the south side, in my opinion? Like, I might as well drive to Ames. It's the same distance. Like, it feels that way to me. Mm-hmm. That's why I never end up bothering you.
Fat Tuesday is worth it. I'll give them their credit.
And I've heard. And eventually I'll get there. And it was wild. It's for, like, 2 years. I lived, like, south side adjacent, like, between, like, downtown and Lincoln. So yeah. It really wouldn't have been that big of a stretch.
But you still didn't go. Never happened.
I was still just more comfortable going north and west than I would be going... Yeah. Like,
this is so, like, I've been trying to ingratiate myself to the black community here in Des Moines more lately, and one of the things I've been doing is the, I call them Blacktivities brunch, because I just want to hang out with black people and go to brunch. And we've gone to Americana both times, and I'm like, I really don't want to go here, but I also don't want to, like, overwhelm Fat Tuesdays on a Sunday and, like, I throw a wrench into what they're doing. So I want to give them heads up. The problem is I never know who I was going to be able to make it, and if it's reasonable to go ahead and do it, or if we need to go to Americana, where they're used to just taking in, like, groups of 12 to 15 people. The problem is we haven't gone over, like, 6 people yet, so we should have gone to Fat Tuesday, but...
Well,
it's
you give us a weekend, I think Drinks with Friends could probably be there for that.
Let's still have a trip. Listen, we're planning, I think, 2 weekends from now. So, yeah, we'll be doing another one. We're going to try Fat Tuesday, so definitely come out. It'll be a
blast. That's amazing. You know? No, but that's, you know, you make a good point about, like, the drive, the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Because here's something that is happened specifically here in this city. When you have clusters of immigration, mm-hmm. they're able to set up neighborhoods, set up restaurants, shops, whatever, and then obviously the food culture kind of comes with it. So then you can know, oh, like, I'm going to head over to this part of town because this is where all the Mexican homies are. I'm going to head over to this part of town because this is where all the Liberian homies are. Yep. I can go, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there is not really, I don't think, that kind of footing for black folks, where it's like, oh, this is, like, where we take care of our business, or any of that kind of stuff, where it's like, this is where we shop, this is where we eat, this is where we can, you know, build our ideas and build our community.
Absolutely.
So we end up getting scattered across, like, oh, I'll set up a spot on the south side of town for some reason. Okay? Or, like, and then here's another random one over on the east side of town. Mm-hmm. It's completely disjointed and away from, you know, the people that I think it's directly aimed to serve.
Well, with Des Moines, too, there aren't any just centralized pockets of black people anymore.
Yeah.
So, because, like, you know, like my mom and this generation growing up, it would have been like the Forest Avenue area and things like that. But then as the Latinx population exploded in Des Moines, you know, a lot of the Latinx people moved into those what would be historically black neighborhoods. And then for the most part, black people in Des Moines, like I said this a couple weeks ago, relatively speaking, aren't doing that bad in the sense that they're confined to one place. They're able to move around and move about. So there hasn't been one of those neighborhoods in a long time.
Yeah. I know you love facts and figures, Dante.
Throw them out there so I can destroy them.
But this is something actually we used in our Progress Iowa show that we just did today. That the building of I-235 actually displaced hundreds of black families.
Really?
There used to be what was Center Street, where that was where a lot of like black commerce was happening, and a place that would have been seen as one of the neighborhoods.
University between like
So in the '60s, when the city decided to then build the interstate to run east to west, they of course had to then carve out all of that space and displace all of those people.
Yeah.
Now, you can argue they were paid to relocate or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, the city cut them a nice check to buy up their land. But that's the kind of stuff that also, like, generally, historically, black folks tend to be the first ones to be like, hey, can y'all niggas get out of here real quick? Because we're going to do a thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem to happen collectively to any other kind of group of people in this country.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, where can we build it? Where do the black people live? We can go ahead and get
that.
We'll get on the cheap, and you know, they'll be happy to get anything we can give
and
them or
even
whatever.
Even if you are paying for it, you're the act of, like, dismantling the community. Like, sometimes that just being around each other, we need that to keep the community intact just as much as the money that they would have made on that. So that's very interesting and, like, crazy to hear because, again, like, the way you guys were talking about how we're not centrally located in one space, that's a very good thing that we're seeing, you know, the affluence that allows us to live in West Des Moines and Ankeny and places like that.
Yeah.
You know, with, I won't say relative normalcy because it's still... It's so white, isn't it?
I told my, again, Caucasian significant other that I would, her family lives in Ankeny, like her mom, her sisters, like all of them live in Ankeny. She's like, I mean, we could go da 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 da. And I'm like, I'm not moving to Ankeny until they put in a Foot Locker. Once that happens, we can have the discussion.
But no bullshit, then, bring it up to me. My brothers came to visit for Christmas. They went through Ankeny once, and now when they text me about Des Moines, and they talk about Ankeny. They spell it A-N-K-K-K. So
it's so accurate.
It's
I was choked and died.
And it's not, again, I don't want anyone that lives in Ankeny to think that I think they're white supremacists, though you may be. That's up to you. You live your life the way you want to live your life. But, like, it's
y'all gotta
just. Yeah, it's just that obvious going through there that it's incredibly white.
Yeah.
So, you know, open up a Foot Locker. I'm
actually got a really good Mexican restaurant out there, too, called Guadalajara's.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the only spots that does a Mexican buffet, like, for, like, lunch.
Man. Mexican buffet?
Right, it's like 12 bucks. It's totally worth it. Yeah, all the queso you can add. Go to Guadalajara's. Shout out to the five Mexicans living in Maine.
Hey, you know what, though? Like, the Mexican restaurants in Des Moines do great. Like, they're fucking thriving. Yeah. There's 13 Abelardos.
But see, that's exactly the point, right? Like, that thrives. There are how many Thai restaurants?
Yeah.
I don't know that many Thai people. You know what I'm saying?
To be honest, I don't know any Asian people. To be honest. No disrespect.
No.
Oh, Danny Carman. I do know Danny Carman. Sorry,
shout
Danny.
Back it up.
Yeah.
Shout out Danny.
Hey, Danny mixed. He like black if he in the sun. I know if I don't get...
So, yeah, but that's the thing. So here are these things that are thriving. But like, so I said, where can I get some good whatever? And someone legit was like, oh, why don't you check out Bubba's?
Yeah.
And that's one that, even though I have no qualms with dining downtown, I refuse to give my mom.
On principle.
Yeah, the fact that I could give the whole, like, isn't that whole thing like plantation chic? Isn't that like the
kind of, so before I ever went, I didn't know that. And then I went, and like the people I was with, they were very impressed. And the food was decent, but I was like, oh, these are the people that like don't realize that Paula Deen was in the wrong yet. Mm. They're still like... like, what? That's just how she is. And I'm like, nah.
That doesn't make it right.
You're celebrating the absolute wrong. Like, have you seen the story of the people who were upset? They went to the plantation and they were talking about slavery?
Yes.
It's those people.
How dare they? Like, we just wanted to see some great, like, architecture homes and see how the people used to live. But then they're going to talk about, like, slavery. Like, well, yeah, that's how those motherfuckers used to live.
Right. You got what you asked for. Like, what else do you want?
Like, I don't really know.
And so, but that's the... And again, I don't know the people at Bubba. I have nothing against them. The food was decent, like I said. But they're celebrating the food that you were eating in the plantation, not the stuff that they were eating in the field homes.
Right.
That's not soul food to me. It is Southern. They do make Southern dishes, but it's not... There's no seasoning. So
I feel like that automatically disqualifies it.
Yeah.
Again, you ain't got no flavor, then what's the point?
There's a difference between Southern and like soul food. And so
yeah.
They're very Southern, but not...
Semi on topic. Do you eat chitlins?
No.
Okay.
My family, they're going to listen to this and be like, oh man, he doesn't. That's right. Yeah. But my family loves them. Yeah. Every family gathering, my grandmother, she finishes everything, and then the last thing she does is cook the chitlins.
Yeah. Because she doesn't want the house to smell like that.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's horrible. I've had the same argument with my family where my first memory in life, my actual first memory.
Oh, this is great.
So I had to be like 3, right? And I remember my mom having me try one, and she like gave me a piece, and she was like, here, try this. And I just remember chewing and chewing and chewing, and it only felt like it getting bigger in my mouth. I was just like, I can't do this. And I like spit it in her hand, and it was just like this lump of gray. And she was like, don't worry, baby, you don't have to do that again. And never again have I. I refuse.
You got mom's permission.
Yeah,
never again.
I used to make them until she was cleaning them one day, because you have to thoroughly clean them. And she actually ran into the butthole, and then she was like, she just dropped the butter. She was like, I'm done. Throw this shit out. I'm not doing it. I won't do it anymore. And, like, it's never made them since. Right. And I had to been like 11, 12 when that happened.
Wow.
So 20 years ago, she stopped cleaning.
That's it. It's a wrap. And that's an anus sign.
She's done.
Damn. No, I mean, every gathering like of importance, there's going to be some there. So, you know, I have my limits too. I have things I don't go for.
Do you?
No.
Have you ever tried them?
No.
You won't even try. I feel like you gotta try them.
No, I don't.
I have tried them.
But do you eat like? Like organ meat from other cultures?
No,
I mean you've been to Japan and stuff.
Yeah,
like Asian food, they use a lot of like organ meat. Stuff.
What about like gizzards and livers?
Nah,
from chicken?
I'll fuck up some gizzards.
I have
gizzards and rice.
I have not fucked with the organs like that. No,
I don't.
No. Lengua tacos, nothing. Like,
no,
about that
no, yeah, I just like. There are some things that are just like not appetizing to me, conceptually. Like Sam Jackson said in Pulp Fiction, like it might taste like pumpkin pie, but I ain't gonna eat it because it's a filthy motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm just not the one. There are plenty of other things I can eat. Speaking of Japan, like it was when I might have accidentally eaten some horse meat, is when I was like, and now I'm a vegetarian.
Really?
Yeah.
Bro, I'd eat a horse. I don't give a shit.
Right.
I'd try some horse if somebody cooked it
but
right.
But it was the principle of the thing. The horse was delicious. If it was horse, it was pretty tasty. The problem was I jumped into a situation eating something that I wasn't, like, sure of what it was.
Yeah.
And so it's just that thing of, like, I don't want to actually eat a butthole and be like... What an interesting flavor.
He only eats his buttholes on purpose.
That's right. If you do it with purpose, do it with clarity.
Not with hot sauce.
Enthusiastic consent.
Listen, man, if you haven't accidentally eaten a butthole, have you living?
Not doing it right.
Yeah. Have you living?
We've all slipped. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying.
Slipped.
Right.
Air quotes.
Slipped.
Oops, I did it again. I ate a butthole.
You know her, so
Britney Spears. She's from the South.
I don't know. It's 1985.
There's the connective tissue. We've got some here. No, it's just that thing that's like. And this is a little derivative, so I apologize. But it's like the episode of the Boondocks, right? We're talking about like. A culture built on survival mechanisms is one thing, but there's a way to divorce ourselves from, like, you can still eat good food and eat well and not have to eat the scraps.
See, I feel like you're crossing into some dangerous territory with that.
How so?
Because I feel like, if we're being real honest, black people are also the first group of people who, if something is done in any way other than how they expect it to be done, it's not going to be accepted.
No, you're absolutely right. There is a very, like, pardon the word, a very, like, conservative attitude that I think that goes with, like, the black community.
Yeah.
Like, tradition, this is the way it goes, this is the way it's always been done, don't fuck with it. Yeah.
There's also some degree of, you have to remember that we haven't very long been able to implement standards, which is a difficult, like, this is something my family talks about a lot. You know how people will be like my mother, she's a very professional woman. She has a real soft voice. It's a very beautiful voice. When she answers the phone, people would always think she was white. And so her standard for me and my brothers was, you need to learn to speak correctly, not because people are going to think you're white, but just because I think it's a good thing. I want you to be able to do whatever. And so that's like the standard for when I was growing up was no one would give me any leeway on that. The standard now is like that's very code switching is a badge of honor, I think. Like you see rappers doing it now, Gucci Mane and like people like them on their Snapchats actively talking about being able to code switch and how you need to be able to speak eloquently in certain situations, but also understand that Ebonics isn't ignorance.
Right.
And so I think that's like a sweeping thing across everything with us is we just got the ability to implement standards on this stuff. So yeah, there are chefs who are of our age, because I'm 32. How old are you guys?
33.
Yeah. Okay, so we're all in the same age range where the people who are coming up developing the next generation of soul food are going to be our peers who grew up under Obama and saw the world was theirs for the taking. And so maybe they find a way to make neck bones healthier or to make collard greens a little less difficult to stomach, on a keto diet or whatever. The changes are coming. We just have to get the standards caught up to it.
And you know, what's wild about that, and I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying. I think what's wild about that is that even with that, you almost have to look to the same people that taught you. Because for me, looking back, like, to the soul food that I grew up with, to the soul food that I'm provided with now, like, to have my grandmother cook it, is amazing. Because you go from, like, you know, making pies with Crisco way back in the day to now freaking smoke turkey in her greens and stuff. Because in that time, she also had to deal with my grandfather's changing health. So, like, as he grew older and, you know, fought diabetes or heart disease or whatever,
absolutely,
she had to make, of course, the things that he would still want, but make them so that it wouldn't exacerbate any health conditions that
right,
he was
having sure.
So, it's like, there's still nobody that can make food better than my hand. You know,
Same here. My granny is the...
Exactly. She's the goat. Like, you're not going to touch her. And even with the changes that she's made through the years.
Who made this potato salad?
I'm telling you. Dolores is one of three potato salads that I'll eat. I'm legit a snob about that.
Your face is so serious right now.
I don't eat potato salad. Potato salad is...
My mom and Josephine actually makes a decent potato salad. She makes a decent potato salad. Outside of that, I'm not eating. No thanks. Don't worry. Sorry.
I wanted to make sure I told you two things. First of all, the thing that I think has been partly to blame for black restaurants not doing well here is the notion that we have to work twice as hard to get half as much.
Yeah.
That lingers for forever. And unless we are winning the awards that people around here seem to deem so important, unless we're like making the black restaurants the cool thing,
I don't see the list.
Yeah, exactly. It's the stuff like that that people snob over and love that's important. But then also, this one has nothing to do with anything other than me wanting to say this out loud. No white people are invited to the cookout as far as I'm concerned. I don't mean to disrespect. I've literally taken white women to Thanksgiving and I'm like, I'm part of the problem. I shouldn't be doing this.
See, and I I have to disagree with you on that, because having a wife significant other who has now been transformed. We've been together for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And so she's been eating she's been eating my family's food for 10 years. And so now we'll go to one of her family events and she legit puts seasoning in her purse. Like, she passed away because she's like, I'm not gonna subject myself to that when I know that there's something else out there.
My girlfriend's family went to Thanksgiving with me once, like her, her parents, her brother, and her sister-in-law, and they literally have been like hitting my grandmother up every Thanksgiving, like, how do you make this, how do you make that, and they make their own versions of it. It's decent, it's, you can stomach it, but like, it, like, it hit that hard that they were like, oh shit, we're
right, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, what's with this garbage? Oh no, can you make dressing? Who's, can somebody bring dressing? Is Katie bringing dressing? Like, that's what they're doing. It's so like, but I had to, like, I had to come to the realization that, like, I know that literally it's fine that they come to Thanksgiving with me. But the idea that they get a pass to the cookout, I
feel like all are welcome at the cookout, just not everybody needs to bring some shit.
I feel like part of the thing that goes with bringing shit is you only have an opinion if you brought something.
Fair.
That, so yeah, I'm willing to give on that.
I'll agree.
You, okay, you can.
That's how you negotiate, people.
You
that's
come
how you
to
negotiate.
The cookout, but you
keep your mouth shut.
Yeah,
right. All you say is,
and not just bring something, but bring something that people partake in.
Yeah, all you say is thank you.
Yeah.
If you brought your two favorite words, say thank you.
Yeah. Forks and knives, right. Or ice, a cake from Costco. Yeah, cut the shit. Miss me with it.
Oh my god.
So I just wanted to say those two.
I appreciate it.
Well, you know, the thing is, you mentioned this notion of kind of setting the standard.
Mm-hmm.
and being able to like commit to that, and that's the thing. Like, I think it's one of those stigmas that follows all black businesses around. Is that like, oh, because it's black, it's lesser.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as slick, it's not as pretty, it's not as this, that, whatever other kind of weird biases.
Oh, you got a little business, you got a little thing that you do.
Yeah.
This
yeah,
is
yeah,
another
yeah.
thing that I'm guilty of, but.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm so bad about
it. Oh, you got your little awards?
Right. Oh, you got your little license? Yeah. You're going to start cooking ribs.
Right.
Oh.
And I really don't mean to, but I'm super guilty. I'm like, oh yeah, they're doing this little thing. Like, and I'm like, I don't mean to downplay people's accomplishments, but you know, I mean, that, I don't know, I guess that's part of the environment that I've grown up in.
Yeah, and so I do you feel like that's a like a factor in why there's such a high failure rate?
Yes.
Because it's just the attitude that not only just the working twice as hard, but then still being like, so you have these people busting their asses and it's like, yeah, but it's like, it's not as good as Zombie Burger or some shit, you know, because it's like just Zombie Burgers, but it's slick, it's pretty, it's got an aesthetic, it's a concept, you know,
and also has spectacle, big bank backing and funding.
Yeah.
So is it that black folks aren't networking the right way then? Because the curate group and these kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what they do, is they just start up restaurants.
Yeah.
That's how that was it. Miso Hungry, that turned into Eggs and Jam shit happened?
Yeah.
It was because
of
them, you know?
Well, but then you also have to then acknowledge the fact that black people are notoriously bad about wanting a hookup.
Yeah.
Okay? And that goes hand in hand with the fact that we flat out do not have the population here to single-handedly support something in the long term. In order for one of our, especially like a restaurant type thing with very low profit margin for the most part.
Food business is very hard.
Right, food business is very hard. You're going to need the support of Caucasians.
It's
not going to happen without it. If
you got 4% of the population, you think you're going
to
make a business work?
Exactly. No, I'm not going to last without it. And so that's where they're in the heart, because you have the people who, the same girl, Sammy, when I was talking about, is one who doesn't like hole-in-the-wall places until she's actually had it. And usually when that happens, it's because I've had to do some carry out, like, yo, I'm gonna grab this and try it. And she's like, oh my god, this is great, let's get it, let's go again. And then she's willing to take that step.
Yeah.
She's not gonna go into some place that's not polished off of recommendation. Like, if it looks raggedy, you know what I'm saying? Like, say, they always say you eat with your eyes first. Same thing goes with atmosphere. Like, you go in and you see some shit in the dude on that doesn't vibe with you, you're not gonna go, or you're not, or even if you tell people about it, it's gonna have that one little caveat, like, oh yeah, the food was good, but like the place was wrecked.
Right.
You know what I mean? And yeah. So
this is a dingy table.
Extra struggles that go along with it. Like, you have to be twice as good to get half as far.
Yeah.
So
that you're 100% right in that it feels like the only way to successfully do a restaurant here as a black person, you'd have to simultaneously be like five star and ratchet.
Yeah.
You have to.
Right.
We've had this conversation for years about something totally non-related, but it fits, to where you have to be intelligent enough to move about, but black enough to be threatened. Like,
yes,
to be,
yes,
like, a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Like, while still being.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's an incredible, like, paradigm we live in where like there's not even a real need for that. Like, you can just support it. If you like it, if you don't. And one of the other things that because I don't know if you guys are in that Food Lovers Des Moines group on Facebook.
I am.
But it's hilarious how many people around here think of themselves as like tastemakers.
Yeah.
And curators of what's important and good.
Their Yelp profile is popular, so don't disrespect them.
By the way, your posts in that group, like, that's Hall of Fame shit right there, bro.
I'm gonna have to get in this group.
Bro, like, let me just talk about, what was it, the big ass cookie? Was that the one? Something like that. Like, that's all it was. It was just like, I had a good ass cookie, and it was no more than that.
Yeah,
was his review. That was a review. It was,
I think,
a good
I posted
ass
something, and I was like, went to such and such, got this, got that, shit was splendid. And they were like, hey, you're gonna have to stop cursing. And I'm like, eat a dick. How dare you? I'm just being honest with you.
And the people responded. They love, yeah. like if you look at it, you see all the little likes, all the little comments, and his shit always be popping.
Yeah.
Because he speaks directly, and people, for some reason, just automatically assume that he's being funny.
And I'm just being, I'm giving
it, keeping it real, right?
It's like, not much to food, guys. We yeah. try.
Is it good? Is it bad? Did I have a good time? Did I not? Would I get this cookie again? Yes,
yeah,
I would.
And it was, and that was at Flick's Brew House of all places. So,
they actually did some fire ass cookies,
bro. They bring them out hot. You can't even touch them, really, bro.
It's really
fantastic.
And that's exactly how the post read. It was the best thing. It was like, because it shuts down all of that, like, all of that self-inflated importance to be like, oh, I'm a connoisseur of hot cookies. You know what I mean? Like, nah, that shit was amazing. The end. Move on. If you go, get one.
I don't know why that can't just be the way we view, again, the black restaurants. I don't know why there's that thing that makes people say, if I don't like something, it's no good. Not if I don't like something, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Like, it can just stop there. You can just not go again.
It doesn't require a conclusion.
Yeah, and then the people who do like it, we just give them more space to like that.
Yeah.
And I just don't think you get that opportunity when you're a black-owned restaurant here. And there are elements of racism to it, but I don't think it's directly that. It's going to be more so like, that's just another problem on the, like, fucking truckload of issues we've already discussed.
Yeah.
And so you've got all these things contributing to, like, a failure rate that's over 80% in restaurants in general, and you're having to work twice as hard to be half as good.
Right.
You're fighting an uphill battle. Well, how do we, like, lift you out of that? So I think, like, one of the things that Fat Tuesday does is
they've been around for a while.
They're the first restaurant I heard about when I moved to Des Moines. I had a Saints logo on the back of my car and my Louisiana license plate still, and the owner of Fat Tuesday saw me at a come and go like 3 days after I moved here. I was like, are you from Louisiana? I own this restaurant. Come check it out. And that was enough. And I went the next week. The food was great. I've been going ever since. I don't think I've gone a month without going to Fat Tuesday. But that's all it took. And every time I go, I end up meeting other people from Louisiana. He's done a great job finding those people. When he sees someone in a Pelicans hoodie, he goes up to them and talks to them. I'm to the point that I'm doing it now. When I see someone else from Louisiana, hey, you going to Fat Tuesday yet? No, I've heard about it. You got to go. Make sure you go. Make sure you go. And it's not anything, I don't think he's doing anything purposely to try to generate that. I think it's just coming naturally because he makes good food, he believes in it, and he's personable in making it happen. Not everyone's going to do it that way, but you have to, again, we have to find whatever footholds we can and toss whatever life preservers we can to these situations. And so for Patton's, it's one of those things where when I see a friend that proposes to someone, I go, hey, just so you know, there's a catering company in Des Moines called Patton's. They do soul food. They're fantastic. You should look them up. Or, you know, someone's doing an event somewhere. Hey, if you guys are going to have food, have you thought about hitting up, is it Artists or Artis or whatever?
Yeah, Artis. Like,
make sure you check him out for this. So I try to push these people and, like, word of mouth, get it out there. But you can only do so much as one person. The thing is, if there becomes a culture of people doing it, you think maybe there has to be another Fat Tuesday out there. There has to be someone who can sustain here.
Well, you bring up it's a really great segue into this other thing. You talk about word of mouth. There are other concepts that are doing very, very well. Through like Instagram, through like the food truck concepts,
yeah,
like
the
trap kitchen stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, is that feasible here in Des Moines?
I mean, that's kind of how Artist T started out.
Yeah,
it's like he was legit cooking out of his apartment. Like, yo, I'm making this. Y'all come get it. I'm about to plate. Get it till it's gone. And now he's doing stuff where I'll go out and like set up the tent like outside of like a Lion Lounge and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the weekend nights where you can go, and even then it's not a big menu type of shit like that.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what I made today. Here's what you come get. It's gone.
I made this. Come eat it.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, go somewhere else.
How can you not respect that when most of it came up with like, this is what I'm cooking, you're going to eat it or you're not going to eat. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, and if you do it well, then hell yeah, I'm all over that shit. Like, I know it's going to be good. Yes, you may have my $10 to $15 for this bread.
Because you know, there is that thing of like, you know, you talk about an industry that has such a high failure rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what a lot of successful, not restaurateurs, but chefs have gotten that foothold through their like food truck concepts because it's
pop-ups.
Yeah, it's easier to mitigate your risk. You can go where the people are. You can have a controlled menu.
Less staff that you have to worry
about. Right. And that's one of the things that's like, is definitely a developing and burgeoning culture here in this city is the notion of even like, can we do food trucks?
And yes.
Like Wings on Wheels is killing it.
Yeah.
Wings on Wheels, that's right.
Now everybody loves taco trucks. Like, there's been a whole bunch of food trucks that have popped. Like, at my job, I work out in Urbandale, and 3 days out the week, they have a food truck come out to, like, one of the business complex, like, parking lots. You know what I'm saying? So people go out.
Well, so when I first moved here, one of my best friends was a bartender at a place called Bicycle Something or other.
Oh, Bombay Bicycle Club.
Bombay Bicycle Club, yeah.
Yep.
At the booth there. BBC. And Taco Apocalypse used to come there as a food truck. So, like, I was eating these tacos or whatever, and then the next thing I know, it's a restaurant. The next thing I know, there's Crunkwich. Next thing I know, there's articles online about the owner and some stuff.
Right? Yeah.
And, like, to me, he was just Sam, the guy who was at the truck, who had a good...
Slinging tacos. Yeah.
And he grew it into something dope. And it's like, if that's the route you want to take, it feels like there were other circumstances that kind of created the demise of that.
Yeah.
You know, all he built. But I feel like there's room for that stuff, but I also feel like Wings on Wheels, I don't think they have to become a brick and mortar restaurant. I like that they're sitting where they're sitting. I like that if you want to get their food, because I always see the reviews about them. Oh, I had to wait 10 minutes. Oh, I had to wait 15 minutes. But that's what you do.
Right.
Like when I get home from church, my grandmother has to fry the cornbread. I have to wait. Like she won't let us start putting the plate together until she's done.
Yeah.
Like once she finishes, she puts it all out. Go for it. So it's like, that's just part of it. And so again, I if they want to expand and eventually open a Wings on Wheels in the East Village, go for it. But I hope that that truck is there for as long as that Advanced Auto Parts is there.
Right.
Yeah. So for me, I sent you the pictures. We were just in Colorado. Shout out Digger Biscuit Company, like my new favorite restaurant. The way that they did their brick and mortar was genius. It was three different restaurants, all under the same roof. Mm-hmm. So from like 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., it was Denver Biscuit Company. We'd go and get like a biscuit, breakfast, brunch, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then overlapping a bit from noon until late night was a pizza spot. So you get pizza for lunch. They also had their liquor license. You could get beer and pizza in the late night, buy it by the slice. And then on the back side of the building, they had an ice cream shop that was open during business hours. So you have all three of these businesses that are sharing facilities and sharing a roof. And saying, like, you can get whatever you want at any time of day.
Yeah, like doing the co-op thing, right. and figuring out how to kind of hack the system. Yeah. Like, we all got shit. Let's all put our shit together under one thing. We can all win. Split these bills.
Right.
So it would be dope.
That's not the blackest, most minority thing you can think of.
Yo, that's to the community. That's how you do it.
Right now.
That's the
thriving.
It would be dope if there was a way to, you know, have the restaurants that didn't make it all. It's just so much overlap in soul food. Like, there's already a thing where, like, if two of your aunts show up with greens,
right?
Like, what you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what, you know?
Somebody's taking home a lot of greens.
Again, who made the potato salad? Yeah. And if two of them made it, and I don't eat any of it, I don't want both of you scooping. Like, get the fuck out of here.
You're taking a prime real estate with some shit I don't want to eat.
Hey,
yeah.
Twice.
So, I mean, again, it would. I love the idea conceptually of that working the way it does. I just wish that there were softer landings for the black people who have the gall to go out and try it.
Yeah.
I just really wish there was.
It's too bad that people have to risk literally everything in order to make something happen rather than be able to just follow, like, you know, follow a passion. Like,
yeah.
That's real life.
So there's a little epilogue here. Just something I want to kick around real quick for our last little piece of the segment. What do you think about hosting a soul food showdown? Like an open invitational to see who can really throw down in the kitchen and like do that thing.
We do.
Yeah. I'd be down to judge.
Right? I think we got three judges.
I'd get in on it. I'd make some pretty good chicken.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I feel like Dan on the throws had it.
Oh, of course. Because I'm thinking about, like, well, not just those who are brave enough and bold enough to be entrepreneurs, but what about people who just know how to just throw it out in a kitchen and just want to represent and be like, nah, this is how you cornbread, y'all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
I would love that. I think it would be dope.
Because I've been talking with one of my restaurant friends about possibly, and this is also to our listeners, you know, that we might try an annual or semi-annual, I don't know, soul food showdown.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah. So that being said, I guess if you support this idea, anyone who's listening or you feel some type of way, let's talk about it. Let's share it around. See if we can, you know, start to kick up some interest and
if
see.
If you just want to cook for us, let us know that too. As long as your kitchen's clean, we'll come try it.
I stay hungry.
Yeah.
So I'm with the shits either way. If you got food and it's good. I feel like there's gonna be a white girl with mixed kids listening right now who's like, you know what? I bet he'd love this grilled cheese. And if you're gonna make it, that's fine. But
grilled cheese.
But know that right now I'm trying to find the people who make good wings.
You want me to make biscuits from scratch for the first time after coming back from Colorado and eating at this different biscuit place? I'm experiencing fire biscuits. I don't know if they're like showdown worthy, but I'm actually fire.
Make them. Do it.
That's how you get good at anything. You know
true.
That.
Oh, yeah.
Practice makes
proficient.
There you go. So keep making them biscuits, and they're going to be the best biscuits.
That's right. I'm going to open my own biscuit spot.
Bruh, it's necessary.
You got the genetic gift.
It's true.
So, real quick.
Baking is actually really easy. It's
kind of weird. I can't bake in my life. I grill, I fry, all the things.
Well, like my granddad made it.
Bake
like
some shit.
And then like,
burn it up. Yeah. But real quick, here's your chance to plug anything you have going on, Mr. Dante Powell.
Okay, August 23rd. 8 p.m. 3619 6th Avenue. This is a place called The Spot. It's where I record my podcast, Catch the Wave. With my friends, we're doing a comedy show called Comedy Kickback. It's going to be fun. It's BYOB, $10 in advance. You can look us up on Facebook, buy tickets there. 15 the day of, because, you know, that's just what we do. It's going to be me. I'm performing, Clifton Antoine, Bernard Bell, Cece Brewer, we've got Tamira Little from Mason City, Day Peace from Mason City, Perry Thompson. So it's a bunch of black comedians who are from Iowa. We're putting the show together. We want all of you there. If you want to come hang out, it's going to be dope. Come to it. And then you can just look me up on Twitter at Dante Powell. Facebook, I'm Dante Powell. And then Instagram, I'm Moose Rat. MooseRattler. Because I rattle mooses. So.
Got rattle the meese.
What?
that was the other option. Right? The meeses get rattled when I'm
rattling. I think that was good, young.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for coming and chopping up with us today about
Thanks
soul food and talking about snacks.
Yeah.
I'm hungry. I need to get some food.
And cheese curds.
And of course, thank you all for listening and supporting us and, you know, being on this journey.
That's right.
Of course, if you have any thoughts or ideas or feelings, always shoot us a comment, slide in the DMs, hit us on Twitter, hit us on Facebook. Anything else? Am I missing anything?
No. Stay black, pay your taxes.
Stay black, pay your taxes. Don't Wesley Snipes.
That's right. See how he got replaced.
Too soon.
I mean, I'm so excited.
He just signed on for Coming to America too.
Wesley?
Yeah.
As who?
I don't know, to be frank.
Oh, because I know they got James Earl Jones back and the dude, the same queen to be, he's back.
Yeah, and James Avery, and they got Wesley's going to be in there. Wesley and Rick Ross of all
people. Right, yeah. Rick,
I got questions. Oh, I got questions. Anyway, we'll be back next week, of course. Keep listening, keep sharing. Stay thirsty.
Shout out to our sponsor.
Of course. This podcast is brought to you by Andro DSM,
Power Up, and Susie Sweet Treats, and Super Green as Love,
not cocaine.
We'll catch y'all next week. Same black time.
Same black channel.
All right, peace.